Hey everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Seriously Risky Business Podcast. My name is Patrick Gray, and I'm joined, of course, by my colleague, Tom Uren. G'day, Tom.
G'day, Pat. How are you?
Good. And I'd like to thank this week's sponsor, Thinks to Canary, a wonderful bunch of people with a wonderful product. And I'd also like to thank the Hewlett Foundation Cyber Initiative, which has supported the Seriously Risky Business work for years now. So thank you very much to the Hewlett Foundation. And Tom, we have got your analysis this week. We're sitting down. We've just edited your newsletter, which is about to go out, and you've taken a deep dive on the issue of the FBI's apparent misuse of 702 of intelligence collected via Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. You know, as it turns out, in the period, I think 2020, 2021, the FBI was just yeeting queries into 702 that they shouldn't have been. I mean, that's really the case here, isn't it?
Yeah. So I think it's worth stepping back and just 702 data is data collected in the US, but is targeted at foreigners who are overseas where the US intelligence community thinks that there's a good chance that they'll have foreign intelligence.
Like the easiest way to describe this, I think this first came along because jihadis were using US-based webmail providers, and there wasn't really a sensible legal mechanism to get access to the data in those mail inboxes, right? Because they're foreign people based somewhere else. Like, it's difficult to get a domestic court to give you the authority to go and obtain that information. So there was, like, you know, there were laws introduced that would enable law enforcement, intelligence and whatnot to actually access that information. And that's what 702 does. So if you want to get into some ISIS person's Facebook DMs, 702 is how you do it.
Yeah, and I think part of it is that there's a different standard of evidence for foreign intelligence than for, like, US persons. So in some sense, it's easier. But anyway, the whole thing has been quite controversial. And the recent news was kicked off by a Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court declassified opinion. So the Office of DNI declassified this opinion. And it's pretty good in that it has a retrospective of all the mistakes, some of the mistakes the FBI has made. And it really does rip into the FBI. So it says they frequently violated the government's own standards of how they should be using this data. So the government has standards that I think are actually pretty sensible. You know, you have to have a legitimate purpose. You have to actually think that you'll find foreign intelligence data or for the FBI evidence of a crime. And it has to be like a particular query. It can't be too broad. So that kind of makes sense. But the FBI was basically ignoring all of that. And it was just willy-nilly doing searches whenever it had someone that they were interested in.
It goes beyond that, right? So, like, if there was some sort of homicide investigation that crossed an FBI agent's desk, they were taking all of the names, like all of the witnesses, the victim, their families, their dependents, yeeting those names into the 702 set. Now, like, let's just, again, this is part of the stepping back and explaining what 702 is for, right? So you're quite right that and this is the thing. It was primarily intended as a foreign-focused intelligence collection program, right? Yep. So it's for organizations like NSA to be able to monitor foreigners who are using US services to plan, you know, for example, violent acts targeting America, also used in, counter-espionage, stuff like that. So really solid uses. I know people who've had to designate people for 702 collection, and it's pretty onerous, right? Like, the process is that the hoops you have to jump through at these SIGINT agencies before you can crack into someone's Facebook messages, you kind of have to make a pretty solid case that that person is a foreigner, that they are overseas. You have to document all of this into a package which gets approved by a supervisor, and then that all goes off to the Department of Justice after the fact for what they call a post-tasking review, right? So the data that winds up in this data set is reasonably confined. But then there's this issue of what they call incidental collection, where a foreign intelligence target might be communicating with a US person. And, you know, that's a whole other there's all this other stuff about masking and whatnot, and like it's all very complicated. But somewhere along the way, the powers that be decided that the FBI should also access this information and for crime fighting. And that's the part where, you know, you were just saying, oh, it all sounds pretty reasonable. But the idea that the FBI can query this data set, which was collected for national security purposes by signals intelligence agencies for crime fighting, actually seems nuts to me.
Yeah, it does seem a bit weird. And I don't know, is this galaxy brain or not, was that idea is that the reason that you give the FBI that power is so that when they get tipped off by NSA that, oh, hey, look, we've got this intercept, someone is communicating with a US person and there's evidence that a crime is being committed, like following up on crimes is not the NSA's job. We need to pass it to the FBI. The FBI needs to have some sort of way to actually find out what is going on and follow up. So maybe that's the reason that that's in there.
Yeah, but I mean, that case, surely you could restrict it to crimes of, you know, like serious transnational crime, like cartels or whatever, you know. But then that would be DEA too, not FBI, you would think, right? So you'd think there's some limiting you could do around there, you know, or, you know, limit it to, and you explored this in the piece, which is, you know, limited to things like counterintelligence, terrorism, things like that. Like the idea that FBI could just carte blanche search the 702 data set if they think it might produce evidence that could be used in a, you know, criminal proceeding. That's nuts.
Yeah, yeah. So basically the story is they've, in a lot of cases, just been default opted in to searches. And so many, many searches have been happening without them realizing. I think that's really bad, especially since 702 was authorized in 2008. So this is literally 15 years later. They're only now just figuring out that, oh, we've been searching this without the proper authority or without the following our own procedures.
Yeah,
I think that I absolutely agree. I think about limiting what that data can be or should be searched for, because there are missions that just make sense with that kind of data. They're the ones you just mentioned, you know, foreign intelligence, espionage, counter-espionage, transnational crime, those sorts of things, it makes sense. Almost everything else, I think it's really just a shot in the dark and not worth doing.
Well, it just seems like they've turned it into part of their standard operating procedure, right? Which is have name, insert into search box, right? And that's not what this is for.
Yeah, so the FBI has already made some changes.
Notwithstanding the fact that how many times are you going to put a random name into the 702 data set and actually get a hit that produces evidence? I mean, I'd love to see the stats on how often these searches actually give them anything useful, because I'm guessing it's not very often.
I don't think they have those stats. So there's the court opinion, the senior government officials wrote to senior Congress people and sort of laid out what the FBI had done. And they'd done this after everything reported in that court opinion. So there've already been changes. The question, I think, is whether they're enough. So they've, you know, more training. That database is now opt-in rather than on by default. You have to have a specific justification per case. There's more review and oversight. Like, these are all good things that probably should have been done 10 years ago.
Well, we were just talking before we got recording, and you had a very funny observation about the FBI's 702 queries in the periods leading up to when 702 sunsets, right? Like, so you see this massive ramp up in queries over time, and then it comes around for reauthorization, and it drops down radically, and then up it creeps again, and here we are at reauthorization time, and we're expecting that, yes, it's going to drop down again. And this, you know, and you make the point very well, I think, that the reason you want an authority like this to sunset every 5 years or whatever is for precisely this reason.
I think there's also I think that's right. It's great that it has forced the intelligence community to really say, this is what 702 is good for. So in the last couple of months, I've seen many different news reports, podcasts, whatever, where they specifically say this is the type of intelligence we're getting. So as a as a non-citizen of the US, but as someone interested in how intelligence works, I think it's great that you get a justification. I think it's also a forcing function for getting processes changed.
Yes.
So I have no doubt that if it weren't for the renewal, the FBI wouldn't be making all these changes. Because, you know, what's in it for them? Nothing at all. It's painful, but it's kind of the right thing to do. And even stepping back again, I think reauthorization allows you to change what's appropriate. So I think there is, in some weird way, a justification for the FBI to have carte blanche access to data. And it's the connecting dots theory. So after September 11, there was a lot of talk about the government having the dots, them just not being connected. And so these kinds of procedural barriers to sharing information, they, I think, are a line that should change over time. So you can imagine...
We say that, right? But it's very easy to forget that in the lead up to 9/11... like, it really was a sort of bolt from the blue. People didn't realize necessarily that this was a problem until something absolutely awful had happened.
Yeah, that's right. So I think it works in two ways. And the way I would like to see it work most of the time is that the line gets pushed further and further back and makes it harder and harder for intelligence agencies to have too much access to data. And so I think that's why renewals are good. In general, I think there's kind of an edge case where you could see it working the other way.
I mean, I think the saving grace here is kind of that stuff I was talking about earlier, where the oversight on the actual tasking side of this at places like Fort Meade, the oversight on that is pretty good. So the chances that you're going to wind up with just absolutely incredible volumes of data on US persons in the 702 data set, that's pretty slim. And you know, when you do wind up with Americans in there, it's usually because they've been communicating with someone who's of legitimate interest from a foreign intelligence perspective, and that's stuff you want to know about when you're looking at things like election interference and, you know, counter-espionage and things like that. But that said, it's not the point. It's not the point. The point is that the FBI is just straight up being careless in this case. And, you know, I've been running this show for a very long time, right? And I think sometimes we get criticized because, generally speaking, we're pretty supportive of government surveillance powers because, you know, in our view, they're mostly used appropriately. So I hope people will take it seriously when it's us saying this is absolutely a terrible problem.
I think so. Yeah, it's. I guess it comes down to believing that government can do good things, and I think, like, just looking at this story more broadly, sort of looking back over the last since 2008, there have been a lot of changes that have imposed more oversight, and so I think that, to me, in a way, it's a reassuring story in that the FISC, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, is doing more, it's requiring more, the FBI is doing more. It's just that it's taken far, far too long to get to a place that I think should be appropriate.
So there we go. We're going to wrap it up there, Tom, but I think the upshot is that perhaps the FBI should not be allowed to search the 702 data set just to discover quote-unquote crimes.
I mean, if you take that to its logical conclusion, that there are going to be crimes in there, right? So the current standard is they've got to have a reasonable expectation, but I think that perhaps that's not enough. They've got to have a reasonable expectation in certain fields because of stuff they already suspect or know. Yeah. And so narrowing it down to things like, that make sense.
As I say, like, that's kind of the burden at the point of ingestion, right? Which makes you wonder how valuable it is in querying just to find evidence of random crimes. I don't know. But it's clearly not right. And anyway, people can go have a read of this week's Seriously Risky Business newsletter. If you want to find it, head to risky.biz/subscribe. And the headline on this one, I came up with and I'm very proud of, G-Men Gone Wild. Tommy Wren, thank you very much for joining me. And yeah, of course, we'll do this all again next week. Cheers.
Thanks, Matt.